take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And welcome to another podcast at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now, former governor, Martin Schreiber. Of course, Marty Schreiber served as governor in the late 1970s, and I had the honor of working on his 1978 campaign and supported his mayoral run in my hometown where I was born in Milwaukee in 1988. Governor, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, what a memory. We should talk about the victories rather than the defeats, but I tell you, it's so good of you to call and for us to have this chance to visit.
Well, you know, it's something that just about every family has dealt with now, and that is Alzheimer's. And I had never heard of Alzheimer's until a man that I worked at a law firm with became a state senator in 1982, and that's Russ Feingold. And his first piece of legislation was comprehensive Alzheimer's legislation. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know what that word meant in the early 1980s. Yeah.
Well, I guess they used to call it hardening of the arteries or other some kind of form of dementia, which Alzheimer's is. It is a form of dementia, but gosh, over the last number of years, it's just been a horrible disease and impacting on so many people.
You've written a book called My Two Elaines. You said your first observation of dementia was when you were campaigning and running for election in 1978, you ran into someone who was cranky and out of sorts, and the spouse was sort of apologizing for his behavior. Well, we've only seen this ramp up, and as baby boomers are aging, this isn't something that's going to go away.
They predict that they will have a cure by the year 2025, and that simply has to be unacceptable, and it has to be unacceptable not only because of the human impact, the grief, the despair, the depression, and the anxiety, all of those things coming into play, but Alzheimer's is the most costly disease to treat. And the reason that it's so costly is because a person with Alzheimer's really cannot be alone. And the person with Alzheimer's, the brain is broken, and what happened is that the more the disease progresses, the less this person has in memory, not only of experiences in the past, but memories of certain things that all of us would take for granted as being so natural and now no longer remembering maybe how to eat, maybe no longer remembering about how to go to the bathroom, maybe no longer remembering, you know, just some of the very, very simple things in life. And so what happens is that not only the person with dementia becoming quite ill and as it relates to the inability to do certain things, but also the toll that it takes on the caregiver. A caregiver of an Alzheimer's patient is more apt to die earlier, more apt to become sicker, more apt to have their savings dissipated because of the longevity of the disease and also because of, again, of the great emotional impact that this disease has on the caregiver, but also on the person with dementia.
Your wife, you suspect, really had the early onset of Alzheimer's way back in 2005. So she was about 65 when you noticed this. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was around that period of time, and she would get lost going to some places. You know, driving in the car that she had been visiting for. Maybe she taught this at the Silver Spring Neighborhood Center in Milwaukee for 10 years and worked there for another 5 as a volunteer, and then she began to get lost after having traveling, you know, to this school, this neighborhood center for 15 years, and she was a great cook, and sometimes she would just forget certain basic ingredients. And
you tell a story about an incident where you had friends over, and obviously growing up in Milwaukee, she learned how to cook German food. She forgot some ingredients. Kind of describe what that was like for you and for her, and the look on her face when she realized there was something wrong.
Yes, well, certainly the greatest impact on her, because she fought so hard to be normal, and she took such great pride in her cooking, and we had, you know, guests over that were not only good friends but also important people, and when she realized that she had just completely messed up on the ingredients, it was one thing for the physical food to taste as it did, but another thing to take note of her emotions and her sadness, and in her now beginning to realize that something is not right. As far as my experiences are concerned, it was a heartbreaking experience, and heartbreaking because all of a sudden this wonderful person, this wonderful cook, this wonderful friend, companion, all of a sudden I began to realize that this is changing, and so you try and cope with that, and therefore the title of the book, My Two Elaines, the first Elaine that I met when I was a freshman in high school in Latin class, who with together we raised four children and had 13 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren, and she helped me in every campaign, and if I lost, she never let me feel defeated. And again, my friend and my companion. And then with the onset of Alzheimer's, a new person began to emerge.
Well, I was going to say, this is the love of your life. You met her in high school. You know, she grew up in Sherman Park, and you grew up a couple blocks from where my grandparents did on the north side of Milwaukee. So this is the love of your life.
Well, it is. And therefore, again, why I felt so compelled to want to write this book, because I know that this disease was impacting on other people's love of their life. And so when I look back on what Elaine was going through and what I was going through, I get angry with myself because there were things that I didn't learn soon enough. There were things that I learned too late, as far as learning about the disease and coping with the disease and also surviving. And yes, it was, Elaine is the first Elaine, certainly the love of my life, but the new Elaine also now is the love of my life, but in a very, very different way. It's in a different way that it's just sort of hard to explain, but she... The first Elaine is there no more. And what I had to learn, what was really so painful but important, was to understand that there is no more first Elaine, that whatever she may have been, I could no longer expect anything similar of that life with her to be with the second Elaine. It would be almost as if she would have broken her leg and I would expect her to run a mile race. Well, her brain was broken, and I couldn't expect anything of her to be similar to what kind of relationship we had before. And again, it's a matter of trying to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive the now what I call the heroics of caregiving, because right now there is no answer. There is no light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. It's the caregiver simply is just an unbelievable hero, and it should be in our gratitude forever.
You it has not been publicized, and I did not know this. I knew that your health had sort of taken a turn because I had asked friends of yours how you were doing, you know, and they were worried about Marty because we don't think he's taking care of himself. What I didn't know until I read this book was, at the beginning of her diagnosis, you suffered lymphoma. So you were going through that as well.
Well, and, you know, that all adds to it, but how she took care of me when I was going through this cancer and helping me with the chemotherapy treatments and staying with me and so forth. And then, you know, there was that. But then after she was diagnosed and living with this disease, the two of us together for a while, what happened was I really had trouble breathing, and I had trouble walking. I couldn't take a couple of steps without just having to stop and gain some more inhales and exhales. And we spent a lot of money, a lot of time trying to figure out what was wrong. And again, the results of that were some of the reasons why I felt compelled to write the book, and that is that when there is a diagnosis for an Alzheimer's patient, there are two patients. There's a caregiver as well. Right. And in retrospect, I think what I was suffering was not only grieving and depression, a broken heart, anxiety, sadness, all of those things coming together. And it is proven that, again, as we talked about before, that a caregiver has a better chance of becoming ill than other caregivers just simply because of the toll this thing takes on
lack of sleep,
emotions.
Raised levels of cortisol for stress, that sort of thing, too?
Oh, sure. Well, lack of sleep, my gosh, you could hardly sleep through the night because for fear that Elaine might get up and walk out the door, which, you know, she actually did when we were visiting our daughter, and we were staying in Boston in a hotel, and at like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a telephone call, and I know nobody would be calling me, so I didn't answer the phone until it rang and rang and rang, and finally I picked it up and said, Mr. Schreiber, could your wife possibly be down here in the lobby? And oh my God, I reached over, she was gone. And so, yes, the lack of sleep, the worry, but then also, they don't mean to, but it's the constant questions, the repetitiveness of the questions, the fact that they will try and save things that they saved before. See, I had some money that we took for a vacation, and lo and behold, I looked and it was gone. And well, she had taken it because she wanted to protect it and hide it. And oh my God, she didn't know what she had done. She didn't know where she had put it. And all of a sudden, this cash was gone. But the thing is, the illness, you know, if a caregiver doesn't get help, they are doing a great disservice to themselves, a greater disservice to their loved one. You mentioned this cortisol. Well, that's a chemical in the body that's produced before the adrenaline. It's comes about when your body's trying to figure out whether it's going to fight or whether it's going to flee. And if your body releases too much of that, what happens is you gain weight. Well, what happens is the body says, wait a minute, we're under attack, and we better get prepared for some rough times. So it produces more cortisol, which causes more gaining of weight. But all of the results of too much cortisol includes, get this, the person with cortisol, you know, the caregiver also having memory impacted because of what is going on and breathing problems and so on down the line. So the goal is to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive. The goal is to help people understand that if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. And the goal is to have people understand that rather than worrying about the storm to pass, to try and learn how to dance in the rain. And no one is ever going to dance, no caregiver is ever going to dance, but to know how about the disease and try and understand how best to help their loved one, that can make all the difference in the world, from reducing stress and anxiety to making moments of joy for everyone.
We'll take a brief pause. Governor Marty Schreiber with us. My Two Elaines, available at bookstores throughout Wisconsin. Stand by. You're at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're talking with former Governor Marty Schreiber. He was governor in the late 1970s in Wisconsin, former lieutenant governor and state senator, proud resident of Milwaukee. He has a very distinguished career, and I remember even as a legislator and lieutenant governor, I have to admit, Governor, I was a little bit of a political geek reading about these things as a kid. I started at 11, knocking on doors for John Lindsay when he ran for president. I remember I was hearing that you paid a great deal of attention and focus on issues with elder care, with making sure that senior citizens got decent care, and we were a proud Schreiber family, so I just want you to know that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that goes back a bit. I tell you, you're so young looking, so energetic and so forth, one would think that you probably had to get out of the cradle in order to support John Lindsay.
Well, I was 11. all right, let me read. Interspersed in this book, and it's haunting to read because Elaine's thoughts are in this book. She kept notes. She knew what she had, and she writes some very profound things. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to read a paragraph here. My Marty, who has always been my strength and comfort, I thank God every day for his understanding, loving ways, patience, good humor, hard work. He has made possible not only for four wonderful children and wonderfully exciting and busy life for me, but also helped so many others throughout his lifetime. He has a true gift for making those around him feel good about themselves, laugh at his jokes, and grow into stronger people. I thank him for that. Hun, I've benefited from you the most. She wrote that March 11, 2009. That was well into her dementia. You write that she had stopped reading as much. In the beginning, she immersed herself in reading about Alzheimer's, but she really did kind of take notes as she transitioned from one lane to another.
Well, she did. And well, first of all, thank you for picking the most complimentary
I know what I'm doing.
it sounded so good. I thought, my gosh, I must have written this myself. But no, when she was diagnosed with the disease going back, and we're ready to go to print on my book, because I knew it all, I thought, because here I was, you know, the caregiver and my two Elaine, so forth. Well, a week or so before, I find all of these notes that she had kept. And I do want to put those notes in there. And one thing that I never really, although we had prayed together and we have cried together, I never really fully understood the impact of that disease on the person diagnosed with dementia, on the courage that it takes and the anxiety that they experience. And she goes through, and there's another section in there where she says how angry she is with me because I'm limiting her and everything that she does. But the reason that I put those notes in there, not only so we can gain an insight into what her experience was, what her mind was going through, but trying to have the caregiver understand how much their loved one depends upon them. Therefore, so important that caregiver take care of themselves so that they are able to continue to have the wherewithal intellectually, patiently, and the ability just to roll and to deal with these just varied kind of behaviors and activities that this person who with the broken brain is now putting forth.
You were offered help in the beginning. You kind of wish you had taken, maybe going to a support group, and you said, you know, as a stoic man of your generation, that didn't seem like it fit your personality. Do you wish in retrospect you had gone?
Oh, I should have. It, you know, when I talk with husbands, you know, I sort of tell them that don't be like me and be arrogant and self-centered. And I didn't want to get help. And now I'm sort of thinking about maybe I didn't want to get help because I was too arrogant, because I was too self-centered, because I wasn't going to give up. No one was going to catch me, you know, not taking care of my wife. And I didn't have the intellect, the brains to understand that this is something that if I'm a real man, then I'm going to ask for help. Because if I don't ask for help, I'm sort of being a wimp in refusing to confront the way I can help Elaine be who she is now. And when they first told me about going to these caregiver support groups, you know, I thought, oh, wow, you know, we're going to sit around in a circle, play Can You Top This? You know, here's what my wife did the other day. Oh, well, look at this is what my wife said the other day. And my mind was just not clicking like it should have. And again, that's why I felt compelled to write the book, to try and say, hey, anyone who ends up being a caregiver or has a loved one with Alzheimer's, before you take the journey I took, just sit down and let me visit with you a little bit and understand that you can try and find moments of joy. You can try and find out how to help yourself, you know, cope and survive, and then maybe even go on to thrive, to go on and do other things. And it's so difficult. It's so difficult.
There is a story about traveling with your wife and her inadvertently, unknowingly trying to be helpful but not being helpful by unpacking everything that you had packed. You get on an airplane, you're the last ones on the flight, you're having trouble with your bags, and you have run into a less than helpful attendant, and you snap. Now, I can't say I've spent a lot of time with you, but when I've interacted with you and others have interacted with you, temperamental is not usually a word associated with Marty Schreiber.
Irrational irritability is what I call it. And if a person is under terrible stress, either because of their own imagination or real, your world closes in on you, and you don't have the ability to roll with things as easily as otherwise. And this experience that I went through for that period of time with this irrational irritability, why I would get angry with a person at the rental car counter, or why I would get angry with a relative or so forth. And I've purchased more flowers and boxes of candy in an attempt to make right, you know, and it was not my nature to do that. And, you know, with this, get in this airplane incident, for example, you know, we were ready to leave the hotel room, and I go and I get the suitcase and it's empty. Oh my! What happened? Well, Elaine, being Elaine, she wanted to be helpful. So then we finally get on the airplane. The only place we can sit is way, way, way in the back. And I've got these two suitcases. We trudge towards the back. We just barely make the plane. And now I've got these two suitcases, and all of the bins, the doors are closed on all the bins. And so I said to the flight attendant, "What should I do with these?" Well, she said, if you wouldn't have been the last one on the airplane, you wouldn't have this problem. And, oh, my gosh, I said, that, you know, she rushed up in front, and she visited. I could see her visiting with very explanatory hand signals and signs about this crazy nut in the back of the, and fortunately, more cooler heads prevailed. They did not toss us off of that airplane, but there is no question that a caregiver has to understand that they are going to be under some significant stress. And because of that, again, if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance is worse. We've got to make sure we understand the disease. And when I say that, I'm not only talking about caregivers, but I'm talking, for example, about the medical profession. I'm talking about employers, health insurance companies, attorneys, when they give advice and counsel on estate planning, to understand that there is this dimension in life that is going to substantially impact on people's ability to communicate, but also on a caregiver's ability to remain healthy.
My sister took care of both my parents, who had different types of dementia, but dementia, it's a pretty remarkable thing and a pretty remarkable sacrifice that she made. I know she would always feel guilty about going to a concert or out to eat and leaving them. You write about a profound sense of loneliness in some respect in this book as well. When you're a caregiver, you really should go out to eat with your friends, and you really should go to a movie, shouldn't you?
Well, no question about that. You've got to try and maintain as much as you can contact with the outside world. And what happens is you focus so much on being a caregiver that it's time-consuming, and the world about you, the outside world, begins to close. But of great tribute to your sister for what she did. And so there's just a couple points here. One, your sister is a true hero for what she did. Also, you cannot close your life off completely because you need that extra experience that is so very important. And if you don't have that, again, you just fall into a terrible morass of inability to have the perspective to deal with this problem as much as you could or should.
Go ahead.
But I was going to say guilt. When I have visited with people who were caregivers, it seems that there is just an overwhelming amount of guilt because people try to do the best that they could, and yet, it's a regressive disease. It never gets any better, gets worse, and so forth. And so people say, oh, well, you know, I could have done better. I should have done this. I should have done that. And one of the things I think that if people understand the disease more, instead of feeling guilty, they're going to be able to say, I did my best, and I'm not proud of the disease, but I did my best, and I'm a hero, and I did what I could. And if we could get more people understanding this disease, so they would then in turn not have to have that guilt carried around with them.
Well, this book is a manual, but it's also, you're getting help as we speak. You have the Alzheimer's Association has a counselor for you that you can talk to now. And they told you something really interesting about not having, on days that you don't feel up to going to see your wife at the care facility. What was their advice?
Well, the Alzheimer's Association has just been terrific. I mean, my gosh, I don't know where I would be without them. But in talking with my counselor, I said, I feel terrible. Well, why? I said, well, I feel terrible because I didn't go see Lane, and I felt so bad, but I didn't want to go see her. And the counselor said, don't go see her. And I was sort of, well, what? And now I'm shocked. What's happening? And the counselor said, look, at the person who is ill, the person with Alzheimer's, their world is so small, but they are so intent and focused on their small world, what is immediately in front of them, what is immediately there, that they can sense and feel and pick up the different emotions that a caregiver or that a visitor might expose to the person with dementia. So if I go in and see Elaine, and I'm anxious or nervous about something, or just having trouble dealing with different, Elaine can pick that up. And so what happens is, and this is true because I experienced this, but what the caregiver said, if your goal is to help your wife feel better, and you go in and you are anxious and cause a lot of nervous anxiety, that's what happens. And so you're not really helping Elaine one bit at all. You're better off staying away because you don't want to bring into their lives any more pressure or anxiety than they're currently experiencing. So that was just one of the very important guidelines they gave me. But one other one, which again gets at this whole business of guilt or knowing more about the disease. I'm talking with the counselor, and we're talking about the fact that some people feel, well, their son or their daughter didn't do this right or that right in caring for their spouse, or the brother or sisters didn't do that right in caring for the parents, and so on. And so my counselor said in less direct words, she's more gracious and kind than what I'm going to relay this as, but everybody handles this disease a different way. And the question is, and I'm paraphrasing it, the counselor would ask me, what right do I have to demand that my loved ones, my children, treat my wife and care for her the same way I would want them to do it? What right do I have to be able to dictate to Elaine's two sisters or brother how they should handle this disease? And when I think of, again, the things that I feel upset about myself with, it's the fact that I did not fully understand as much as I could have about the fact that my children were losing a mom. I didn't understand enough that my wife's sisters were losing their sister and her brother losing his sister. And I just was thinking about how me, Marty Schreiber, was handling this, and I felt that they had to handle this disease the same way I did, and therefore I could dictate to them what they should be doing and how they should visit and how long and so forth. So the counselor says, you know, I have no right to dictate. But then another step forward, and that is, not only do I not have the right to dictate how others should handle this disease, but the question is of me, why do I want to use up such valuable time and emotions in trying to get some people to do some things that is maybe completely alien to them, not within the realm of their character or personality? And as I look at this, the word that come out is let go. I had to let go of the fact that different people were handling this disease differently than I thought they should. And once you work on letting go, and once I began to let go, it made a whole new difference, and I don't have to worry about those kinds of things anymore. And again, if this book is a primer on anything, it's just to try and help the dear ones who are, as caregivers, trying to get through all of this and doing the best that they can, with hopefully understanding a little bit more about some of the emotions and physical impacts of this disease.
Governor, let me ask you one more question. What's been the response to this book around the state?
It is resonating, and I'm so glad when I say that, because people come up and they say, we're just so grateful because now we understand and I don't have to feel guilty anymore. Or I didn't know that, for example, therapeutic fibbing is okay. And so we get to the question. I'm going to go into now the third printing of the book, and what I'm going to be adding to this are discussions about questions that I got along the way, and that is why it's a feeling of guilt. The question is, you know, how can I help my loved ones better understand, and a number of others. So
when is the next printing?
Well, it's going to come out. Next printing is going to probably go to print probably in about two to three weeks. And when you say how is the book doing, it's doing well throughout Wisconsin. I've had a chance to go out and meet so many wonderful, outstanding heroes and people just working so hard, whether direct family members or people on the front line.
This disease knows no political party, no race, no gender, no sexual orientation, no economic status. It affects everyone.
It affects everyone.
Yeah.
It affects everyone. What does Marty Schreiber and Mrs. Reagan have in common? Both of our spouses had Alzheimer's.
That is correct. Well, I look forward to interview. Hopefully you'll do another interview with us when the next pressing comes out, and we can talk about some of the other things that you have in that book, because I really like sharing this information with my listeners.
Well, you're terrific. I'm grateful for the opportunity not only to visit with you, but to understand your passion to help make a difference in how people might be able to handle this disease, and then to have you admit publicly that you helped me in my election campaigns and so forth.
Remember, you were the last governor to actually invite me to the executive residence. You had a big Christmas party before you left, so I got the opportunity to see the executive residence, and I was only 17 at the time, so that was a big deal.
Yeah, well, I think I explained at the time. I go back then, and I think I was looking up at the ceiling, and there was some paint chipping up, and I thought, I'm getting out of here. This place here is getting run down. So I decided to move on.
Governor, thank you. My Two Elaines, available bookstores throughout Wisconsin. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon as well. I salute you for what you've done, and strength and courage as you move forward.
Well, you're great. I salute you for everything that you have done, and again, I'm grateful for this opportunity to visit. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Marty.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.